Bruce Rigby now is going to address the issue of financing demographic shifts, pension and healthcare scenarios to 2030. Bruce leads Mercer's global retirement business and is a member of the Global Operating Committee. He's been with Mercer, or one of its predecessor companies, for 30 years. He gets his 30-year badge this year, gold medal, since 1979. Before commencing his current role 5 years ago, he was head of the UK retirement practice and a member of the UK Executive Committee, and prior to that he fulfilled a number of management roles in different parts of the UK business. He's based in the UK, of course. He's also the actuary and consultant for a small number of major clients focusing on corporate benefits advice. He has a long and varied experience of dealing with diverse issues faced by plan sponsors and trustees in the effective management and development of their pension plans. He also fulfills an executive sponsorship role for multinational clients around the world. Academically, he has a first-class honours degree in mathematics and economics from Edinburgh University, and is a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries. Bruce gets to Australia every couple of years. He's a little on the jet lag side, but he's about to bounce up now. Please welcome Bruce Rigby.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure about bouncing, but and I'll use the jet lag excuse to full effect if you don't enjoy this. But I was beginning to feel somewhat guilty about having flown all the way from the UK, having just listened to the description about climate change. And I want to talk over the next 30 minutes or so a little bit more about, from a global perspective, but still recognising that the issues that I'm going to talk about are issues that apply here in Australia. And I'm very conscious that the federal budget's coming up, and also of the Harmer and Henry reviews. So what I'm going to talk about does have global implications, but I'm sure you will all bring back to it the issues that are important here in Australia. I want to talk a little bit about the short term in terms of giving a context for the longer term scenarios that I'll be describing, and then finish off by a little bit of how different ways in which we might look at this may result in different actions. Something that you know all about, and I'm sorry for getting everyone depressed so early in the morning again, but clearly we do have a crisis. I think the speed with which it's happened and the global scale of it are certainly not something that I've experienced, even though I've been in this business for 30 years. And I think the important point I want to make here is more about the fact that I think the world is going to be a different place after the current crisis eventually plays out. And that's going to have some implications for pensions and healthcare into the future. But on this slide, it said uncertainty, the new reality, or is it? Let me quote from a very well-respected source who said, "In these matters, the only certainty is that nothing is certain." These were the words of the famous Roman scholar and scientist Pliny the Elder, as I'm sure you all knew, who lived between 23 and 79 AD. But given his views on lack of certainty, it's entirely appropriate that he died as a result of the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. Seriously, though, I life is uncertain. We live in uncertain times. But I think also sometimes useful just to track back. If you go back 20 years, I mean, I want to look forward 20 years, but if you go back 20 years from now, I think very few people would have anticipated, for example, the huge improvement in life expectancy that we now find, certainly in many parts of the world. Coming from Scotland, that's not entirely the case. In Scotland, I think we have, in one area of Glasgow, the lowest life expectancy of a male anywhere in the developed or so-called developed world, which is age 56, which is quite startling and worrying. Something to do with diet, I believe. So I'd like to have a look at some of the short-term reactions to the current crisis and think about how that will affect things going forward. And to do so, we in Mercer, we did a sort of what we called a snapshot survey back in November. So in terms of the fast-moving nature of things, it's already a bit out of date, but I thought it was quite useful just to have a look at this. It covered, or it was participated in by 1,028 HR professionals who represented over 100 HR practices and plans. So it was a reasonably statistically relevant survey, I think. Although saying that in front of a bunch of actuaries is always a bit dangerous. The survey findings, we split it into defined benefit, defined contributions. So, I defined benefit plans first. I think it's fair to say the main focus here was one on risk control. About 60% of the respondents want to understand and take action to mitigate risks in their defined benefit plans. Changing investment strategy and changing funding policy were seen as being reasonable ways to reduce risk. Interestingly, at that point, cutting back or stopping accruals was not necessarily a big issue. However, it is worth saying that something like 25% or so of participants did have that in mind. It's also interesting, and it's not obvious from the slide, that the results across different geographies and across different industries were remarkably consistent. So clearly, risk management is a widespread concern, but certainly at that point, there was a lack of clarity on the part of sponsors as to how they were going to actually manage that risk. And I think that still remains an issue and one that is taxing the thinking of many people around the world. Contrasting that with defined contribution or participants who had defined contribution plans, I think in this case the planning was more specific, if you will. Employers, first and foremost, want to ensure that the members understand their plans. Something like 85% said that they were likely to enhance employee communication and education regarding the investment choices, options, and long-term savings objectives. Now, maybe this is already well in hand here in Australia. I get different views from different people here, but certainly around the world, I think this is a very big issue and one that that does need to be tackled. Also from this, about three quarters of the sponsors are likely to review their plan fees. This is a big issue in the United States at the moment, specifically. And also look at their fund lineup, including the current and potential use of life cycle funds and default options. However, again, the vast majority of respondents were not intent on reducing contributions to their defined contribution plan. My sense is that if we rerun this, which I think we're going to do in the quite near future, I think we might see a more extreme picture now than perhaps was the case back in November when this survey was carried out. Just briefly, one of the other questions was what the HR professionals thought employees were concerned about. And the one that came out on top, surprisingly, and I think in my view, was that there was the impact of the economic turmoil on their retirement plan investments. That came out ahead of concern about jobs themselves. But I think both are obviously up there and clearly concern about reduction in post-retirement income is and continues to, well, was and continues to be a huge issue for many, many, many people. Again, just to put some of this in context, clearly the economic stress is impacting on different businesses in different ways. In some cases, a bit of judicious housekeeping is what's being considered. But in other cases, far more radical action is being planned. I think the current climate is allowing companies to push through what may well have been long desired and indeed overdue changes in their business model. getting rid of low performers, shifting jobs to low-cost locations. On the other hand, there are some more fundamental and long-lasting changes that I think are manifesting themselves. For example, cutting back on training. We know it always happens when times get a bit tough, but it does have a longer-term impact. And also the whole issue of shifting risk from the employer to the employee. Again, I'd argue that has some fairly fundamental long-term impact. It may be quite the right thing to do, but it does change the dynamic that's existed to date. I think one thing to say is that one size does not fit all in this case, I believe, and this is the important point, I guess, is that there is a potential for significant and long-lasting change as a result of the impact of the current economic situation. And that's what I want to look at next in terms of what that longer impact might actually be. To do that, I would like to draw your attention to a study that we've been participating in. And this really predates the global financial crisis. So I think the current economic situation certainly educates and influences this debate. But this was a problem or an issue that was being raised well in advance of the current economic situation. And that's really the one of aging societies. For actuaries around, that's a pretty familiar concept. There are various numbers around that people quote. The United Nations did in 2007 did a study and projected that by 2050 the number of people of age 60 or above would increase in developed countries from 21% of the population to 32% of the population. So a third of the population being 60 or over. And in the less developed countries, going from 8% to 20%. So these are huge changes, profound implications for labor markets, aggregate demand, political and societal structures. And more fundamentally, for the purpose of this discussion, this will significantly challenge the affordability of traditional pension and healthcare systems. So forget about the economic crisis. This is a problem that was there and continues to be so. So in other words, new approaches need to be found. And that may have been exacerbated by the current situation, but new approaches, new solutions need to be found to tackle the issues of pension and healthcare. And those actions need to be joint actions by the multiple stakeholders who are involved, and I'll come back to that in a second. So in order to stimulate the debate, largely between governments and the private sector, this study was started back in 2007. It's a joint study led by the World Economic Forum and participated in by the OECD and by Mercer. And the whole project started by addressing the following central question. How can governments, the private sector, and individuals finance adequate and accessible pension and healthcare services in 2030? The project, just for information, consists of two phases, and that will become clear in a second. The first one ran from mid-2007 through to the middle of last year. And that focused on developing a number of scenarios for the future of pensions and healthcare over the next 20 years or so. The second phase is currently in train, started middle of last year and runs probably through to the third quarter of this year. And that's going to look more deeply into the strategic options available to the various stakeholders to proactively influence the future in these very important areas. The project was designed with six stakeholder groups in mind, the ones in the circle there. So it looked at individuals, government, financial institutions, healthcare providers, employers, and families. So trying to think about it in a holistic way from the points of view of all six groups of stakeholders. And in order to build the required scenarios, the way in which this is done is to generate a set of driving forces that are going to be important in shaping the future. And those are listed down the left-hand side of the slide there. The forces that are both highly important but also highly uncertain tend to be those that are of particular interest when building scenario frameworks and also for shaping the differences between the different scenarios that are used. How these forces play out on a local country basis will depend on a number of more local aspects: cultural preferences, expectations, legacy pension promises being a big one, and also the amount of financing, of pre-funding or pay-as-you-go. But in terms of developing the scenarios, what are the so-called critical uncertainties? And this is just another way of rebalancing. I'm not sure you can read all of these, but these are really just putting the different driving forces in this model and looking at the degree of impact and the degree of uncertainty. And as I said earlier, the ones that are seen to be the most interesting are those on the top right-hand side. Some of them you may find surprising. There are not there. Demographic shifts are viewed as high impact, but there's a feeling that they're a little bit more predictable, perhaps, than some of these others. Some of the others, like economic performance, I mean, clearly we can have significant variation, and that becomes obvious from the way that this project has worked out. But I mean, things like healthcare innovation and regulation, I believe that the world's fastest growing area of patent applications is in medical technology. Lots of change in that area. I think the other ones that are quite interesting are emerging middle class and developing countries. It's estimated that by 2030, the so-called middle class will have increased in developing countries by a factor of 3, from 400 million to 1.2 billion. And that would represent 15% of the world's population. The point there, expectations for people who now see themselves in some way as being middle class are different, and it is significant. Things like the changing pattern of disease. The SARS epidemic back in 2003 had a major impact, as I'm sure many of you are very well aware, in Asia Pacific. Cost a lot of money, reduced air traffic. And what I found quite interesting was that there was a UN paper a couple of years ago said that significant likelihood that if there was some sort of influenza epidemic, then it could actually result in something like 25% of the global workforce being absent at any one time. So these things are big uncertain issues that were then used to develop the scenarios. Now, why scenarios? What about forecasts? Well, this is I find quite interesting actually to get into this in terms of thinking about why it was helpful to think about scenarios rather than thinking about the forecasts themselves. Scenarios, to quote the World Economic Forum, are informed and provocative narratives about the future based on rigorous research and creative insight by a wide variety of stakeholders. And I find it quite an interesting way. They're certainly not predicting the future. They're not forecasts of what is going to be the future. What they're putting forward are different potential outcomes that allow you then to think about the range of actions that might be taken, the range of strategic choices that can be made, thinking about the various outcomes that might result over the next 20 years or so. So the three possible global futures that were identified have been called the winners and the rest, we're all in this together, and you're on your own. I'll describe them in a bit more detail just in a second. This really looks at it from the point of view of the, as I say, the different stakeholders, and thinks about the various challenges that will evolve over the next 20 years. The scenarios have been described on two key axes. First of all, the level of economic growth, which is the vertical axis there. And the second one is the social and political attitude to the responsibility for provision and financing of social services. So anything from individual responsibility to collective accountability. So it was against those two axes that that these three scenarios were created. So just to describe them in a little bit more detail. The first one, winners and the rest. This is a scenario where there is high global growth, and that in effect delays the financial consequences of the growing demographic crisis. So despite growing liabilities from the aging population, most governments maintain some sort of scaled back version of existing social security systems. They do so probably as a result of political expediency. However, what does result is increased inequality because of the underinvestment in the public sector. And such systems are seen as increasingly inadequate by those on low incomes who rely on them, and something of a conflict-ridden climate results, giving a winners and the rest scenario. For pensions and healthcare, new medical technologies target the high earners who can afford it, and there's a greater healthcare gap grows between the public and private sector. Employers provide benefits but shift the risk to the employee. And as there is a war for skilled talent, benefits for the few are improved but not for the rest. The second one, we're all in this together. This is a medium growth strategy, or scenario rather. But it really is founded on there being a reining in of inequality and a reassertion of the idea of collective responsibility and accountability for social services. How likely? I'll leave it to you. As I say, growth in this scenario is moderate, and there's an emphasis on finding innovative, efficient and inclusive ways of managing the financial implications of the demographic shift. For pensions and healthcare, employers provide benefits. They share the cost and the risk. There are new risk-sharing pension arrangements introduced, and community care, or community-based care rather, grows beyond where it is today. The last one, you're on your own. Economic recession, low growth, individual responsibility forced on more and more people, failure of existing systems, government take aggressive measures to privatise healthcare, pensions, pushing more onto the individual. As I say, for pensions, there's a need for phased retirement, flexible work. There's a reduction in benefits in this scenario and a very pronounced shift of risk and cost to the employee. And in parts of the world where it still exists, an acceleration of the move from DB to DC and a move to more flex benefits programs. I thought at this point I would just seek a show of hands just to see what you thought about these three scenarios as being the most believable. So if you indulge me by voting, perhaps, on what you would see as being the most likely, I think it would be quite interesting. Who would see the winners and the rest as being the most likely? Okay. We're all in this together? Oh, reassuring. and you're on your own? Right. That's well, I think it's fair to say that you're on your own is very much in third place, which I must admit, I personally, my vote would have been for that last one, but it's reassuring to some extent that the winners and the rest, and we're all in this together, came out at least from this sample as being equally likely. So thank you for sharing that. That's good. No presentation to an actuarial audience is complete without more numbers, so I thought I would I'd throw some more in at this point. I think the point here is that every country around the world is going to be affected by this shift. But some are going to be more affected than others. And when you look at some of these numbers, particularly for Japan and Italy, the numbers are truly mind-blowing in terms of the impact that this is going to have, and truly unsustainable. But I think the point is, in a way that I'm trying to bring out here, is that wherever you are, it's going to have an impact, and it's going to need action across the world to make this or to solve this issue. And again, just a little bit more. This is not just about pension, which is my first love, but certainly also about healthcare. The two are inextricably linked, I'd suggest, in any case, and that you can't really tackle one without tackling the other at the same time. So, again, just to demonstrate, I think, that we do have a very significant issue on our hands. In terms of what happens next with this survey, having developed these scenarios, the idea, as I say now, is to do three things. Create an effective dialogue between the key stakeholders, examine best global practices, and to discuss how the public and private sector can work together to address these issues. Some of the examples of the strategic options are shown here on the slide, and I'll talk a little bit about a couple of them in a second. But I think, again, I'd stress this is about pension and healthcare. These are just the pension ones. They're equally same sort of thing for healthcare, because, as I say, I think they're connected. And we do need to also think a bit wider in terms of things like home equity release products and such like as being an integral part of how we address the issues. So just before I close, I just wanted to have a quick look at what's happening in the short term and the longer term. But the short term, largely because I think what's happening today is going to be influential in terms of how some of these scenarios might develop in the future. And specifically, I think you're all very well aware of a lot of these issues that are facing both the human resource and financial parts of companies today. And also about some of the outcomes. I think one of the things that is interesting, however, in general about this is that this gives companies opportunity to actually align their benefit policies with business policies. Because quite often these things can go off in slightly different directions or only by chance happen to be aligned. And I think because of the severity of the current situation, a lot of companies are standing back saying, well, how do we create benefit policies that are going to be appropriate for our business going forward? And I think the reason why that's important specifically to this discussion is because that's going to have an impact on what does actually transpire as regards these longer-term, high-impact strategic options. I won't go through these each in detail, but I things like financial education, I was talking to some people last night about this, is financial education enough? Necessary but not sufficient, I think, is probably the way I would look at it. I think the things like automation and simplification need to go hand in hand with financial education. Let's make it as simple as possible for people to make decisions and actually help them to make the decisions if at all possible. What about promoting work for older employees? Now, that really, I think, has to be a joint effort between government and employers. Government, however, can make it easier for employers to continue to employ older workers. That is happening in some parts of the world. I was interested on the promote wellness option there that in Mexico, and I won't try and give you the Spanish translation of it, but they introduced a project recently called, in English, Let's Lose a Million Kilos. It was a national campaign to get Mexicans to collectively trim 1 million kilos off their body weight. And the campaign reached its goal in just 4 months, with 2 million people participating. So it's a small, well, not too small, but it's an individual example of what can be done. But I think what comes out of this in large part is that there needs to be more education, there needs to be more preventative action taken, both particularly in the healthcare area, to manage costs. There needs to be a recognition there's a finite amount of money, whatever we do here, and how best is that spent. And that's going to be a challenge, both in the pension area and in the healthcare area going forward. So just to conclude, what are the key issues? Well, how will the future look? I'm very reassured by the response of you as an audience here. It's not as bleak as I was thinking on the basis of this. What is the role of governments, private sector, and individuals? And I think the point here is this is a joint effort. It has to be a joint effort. It can't rely on any one of those groups to solve this problem. What actions can the stakeholders take to capitalize on the opportunities and overcome today's challenges? It may be that the challenges today do allow us to come up with a more appropriate way to deal with things over the next 20 years. I think the world is at a turning point in more ways than one. And in this case, it's shaped by two dominant driving forces. One is the obvious low economic growth factor. But the other are the changing societal attitudes to social welfare and the social contract between the stakeholders, in this case, I would think, will be radically redefined by 2030. So thanks very much indeed for listening.